This is Marketing Spice, a podcast by Pemento.
The foundations for building that trust definitely start from the inside out. And if a business isn't aligned and living its values internally, it's never going to be successful in the wider world where consumers, you know, are smart.
Don't make a knee-jerk reaction, succumb to social media pressure and the pressure of the media, because often you can work through these things without fueling the fire.
Hello there, I'm Paddy Woods and welcome back to Marketing Spice. In every episode, we're looking at aspects of marketing, covering the latest trends, insights, and advice, meeting agency leaders from a variety of different fields along the way. But in this episode, we're looking at all things across PR, social, and influencer marketing. It's a huge area that every brand operates in. So what do brands need to be thinking about right now as they look at their strategies for PR, social, and use of influencers in the year ahead? Well, let's find out. This is Marketing Spice. So then, let's get started with our first guest to talk through some considerations around influencer marketing for brands in 2022. With me is Tom Molyneux, who is the co-founder of Crypt, a new type of creative agency that focuses on helping brands to access culture in the right way and gain recognition and respect. Tom, I've been reading lots around influencer marketing and how it's predicted to have doubled in value in the last 2 years. In 2019, it was worth $8 billion and is now expected to be $15 billion by 2022. And the reason for this continued growth is, even during the pandemic, is marketers are increasingly putting budgets into influencer campaigns. Tom, what is going on to drive such growth in influencer marketing?
Yeah, I mean, it's a complex world, influencer marketing. The reason that it is so successful is essentially social media. I mean, the kind of evolution of platforms like Instagram, TikTok has essentially created these creators off the back of it, where, you know, we're in a world at the moment where anybody can be a creator. So anybody can create content, anybody can post that quite easily and essentially get a following behind them. So what has happened now is that there are millions and millions and millions of influencers, quote unquote, around the world that have these followings, have an audience that they have access to and can influence. And obviously that is very attractive to be able to tell your brand message in an authentic way. That's what brands want to do more and more, is how do I be authentic? How do I speak directly to my audience? Well, that is essentially what influencers can do for you. So if you can utilize an influencer in the right way as a brand, you can create that relationship with your consumer that helps you to resonate more. And this is what influencer marketing has been so successful as. It's reaching audiences at scale. It's reaching audiences that you can measure that link to your consumer. So there are influencers in different industries, whether it's sport, fashion, music, arts. So there are so many different creators out there that can help to get your brand message out there. To answer your question, the sheer scale essentially of influencers that are out there is one of the main reasons I think why it has blown up the way it has. The sheer scale of who you can work with, the sheer scale of, you know, top tier celebrities or nano influencers with 10,000 followers. There's such a range of people that you can work with. And marketers have just seen that it's a more effective way of actually reaching an audience. That's kind of a key thing as well. It's actually delivering better results, better ROI than media campaigns working with these influencers, which is a massively important part of it. It has to be measurable. It has to make sense for you to invest that budget into working with influencers, which is what marketers are now seeing, essentially.
What I'm seeing and what's sort of going on is there's lots of generic campaigns which just don't do anything and fall flat and have this negative impact on the brand. From your perspective, how do you go about working with a brand to prevent this happening?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that we talk about a lot through our agency. Reason why we started Crypt was because we were seeing that brands were being unauthentic with their messaging, with the way that they were trying to work with within culture, essentially. So we always use Kendall Jenner and Pepsi as an example of a campaign that fell flat on its face, where it was around a protest. The protester handed the policeman a flower and she handed them a Pepsi can. And obviously, you know, maybe in the, you know, in their minds, something that was, you know, really cool. And we've got Kendall Jenner and, you know, it's this is going to be an amazing campaign, but actually it was received extremely badly. And this is happening day in, day out, where marketers are just missing the mark. They're not understanding culture and they're not understanding the nuances to the level they need to in order to understand how you work with influencers in the right way. So it's not as easy as just saying, right, you'll do this. You need to really do your research and you need to get that understanding of what is the right thing for me to say at the moment that is going to resonate with my audience. So you have to really do your research. You have to really understand your audiences, do some audience listening and really understand culture and try and get that understanding of what trends are out there at the moment. And then obviously the other side is, you know, making sure that you're doing the right analysis on influencers themselves. So influencers have maybe fake followers, or, you know, maybe their engagement rate isn't that great. So that's another key part, is that you're utilizing the right tools in order to measure the influencers that you're working with, making sure that their content matches up with your content, what you want to talk about. It's really important that you do the due diligence to ensure that that influencer is right for your brand and you're doing something with them that you know is going to resonate within culture. And I think that's kind of the key area where brands do miss the mark, and where it can probably be quite intimidating for brands to understand, what do I do? How do I talk to my audience in the right way? So you really need to have that level of insight and understanding in order to kind of navigate that world properly.
There's fake followers and that sort of thing. I'd love to come on and talk tools in a minute, but doing your research and your due diligence, you hear lots of influencers falling outside of the regulatory standards. How do you protect the brand from influencer mistakes? So not adhering to advertising standards, etc.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you need to kind of do your groundwork again in terms of, you know, vetting influencers, making sure that the content that they've posted out is kind of right for the brand. And I think, you know, it's about how you're briefing them in the right way to ensure that, you know, they are encapsulating the right messaging from your brand. So the influencer brief is probably one of the most important parts of an influencer relationship. The brief is essentially the output that you're going to get on the content. So if that brief is very loose and you don't have any guidelines around what you're asking an influencer to say, then the content could turn out to be different to what you want it to be. They could turn out to maybe say something in that content that you're not happy with. So while you don't want to give them a script necessarily, because you want it to come across as authentic, you still need to make sure that brief is detailed enough that they're talking about the brand in the right way. And obviously in terms of, you know, situations where an influencer's maybe 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, gone and done something controversial that's then had a negative impact on the brand, unfortunately you can't foresee that, but at the same time you can see the pitfalls of a certain character. You know, is this person going to be right for what I represent? Going back to what I said earlier, that's why it's so important that as a brand you do that research into, what do I represent as a brand? Where do I fit in this influencer landscape? A Tesco is going to have a very different influencer landscape to a Nike, for example. They're going to be probably working with different types of creators. And that's when these relationships work so well, is when you see a brand and an influencer and you just think that's such a good fit. For whatever reason, their values match up directly with the brand values. And that's what we're striving for. We're striving to get to that stage where there is a seamless fit between the influencer and the brand. And it almost feels like, it genuinely feels like that person is your brand ambassador. And that comes with that research, that due diligence, that understanding of culture that is so important. And unfortunately, it is where marketers can get it very, very wrong as well.
I think that's really interesting from a brand perspective. As you say, it still goes back to that brand authenticity and the sort of aligned values. And then just with this phenomenal growth and of influence marketing, what are the next sort of key trends that influence marketing is going to take?
I think measurement is going to be a big one. Already it's becoming better in terms of measuring that ROI for campaigns. So I think there's going to be more intelligence around that, about how you're tracking your purchases through influencer activity, because they understand that's such an important part of influencer marketing. And I think as platforms become more intelligent, it's kind of going to be a seamless way of help to measure that. I think that intelligence is going to improve. I think we'll definitely start to see influencers becoming their own brands more and more. So you're seeing that, you know, influencers are starting up their own clothing companies. This is obviously traditionally something that only maybe a very high-end celebrity would be doing. So now, because influencers have such access to an audience that is engaged, you start to see a lot more of these influencers, even kind of mid-level, not even the kind of 20 million follower plus, but people with maybe a million followers or 500,000 followers will start to create their own brands. And even just, you know, ways of working with influencers, I think, will kind of evolve. Previously, it's a very transactional thing of, here's a budget and go do a post. But I think moving forward, it'll be more, how are you integrating into my company, or how are we kind of from a long-term partnership? What is it that you can bring to my brand, and how can we try and create a relationship where there's more value exchange? So I think there'll be innovation as well in kind of partnerships in general and how that's structured beyond just a money exchange.
And the whole thing about sort of influencers creating their own products and brands themselves, when brands look to partner with them, will there be stages where the influencer is working with another brand, which is a direct competitor? Because obviously the consumers are going to be very tight to that sort of fit. So How do brands manage that, or how do they make sure that influence is not working with a competitor?
I think as a brand, probably quality over quantity. You know, obviously some brands do need to access influencers at scale and they want to work with a large number in order to hit their objectives. But at the same time, I think you also want to make sure that you're kind of looking at it from a long-term perspective and a long-term partnership. I think that's the ideal. Any brand should be looking at their partnerships, influencer partnerships, of how are we growing with this person together and how are we creating a relationship. I mean, obviously the prime example is somebody like Stormzy and Adidas. You know, they were seeding him trainers and helping with his music video before he even became famous. And, you know, they've obviously done that with thousands and thousands of young, talented artists. But, you know, that relationship is so ingrained. And they built that relationship over a sustained period of time where when he did blow, of course, he's, you know, he's not going to switch to Nike because the relationship is already there. That's kind of the ideal, is that you know, you create these relationships that share the same values and you're growing together. And that's when it feels very, very authentic. I think one of the main issues with influencer marketing at the moment is that people switch off now when they see that kind of thing saying paid promotion. People don't generally want to see an advert when they're scrolling through their Instagram feed. So it's the marketer's job to really create something that feels natural, feels authentic and feels real, and do something that actually is going to resonate with that audience in the right way. Be creative, and also crucially make sure that the influencer that you're partnering with matches your values, as I said before, and it, so it feels authentic. You know, Stormzy, I'm sure through his music videos, even the ones where he didn't get paid with Adidas, was still wearing Adidas clothing because of the partnership that they created. So that's kind of the real kind of key thing for us as an agency, is how we're avoiding that and creating real relationships with brands and creators, but crucially how we're also doing something that is creative, that's going to resonate in the right way within culture. And that's kind of the key for us.
Last one, I mentioned I would ask you about the tools. Are you able to name just a couple of tools that brands should really be looking to invest in, or they should be definitely using to help them?
Yeah, I mean, we use our own internal platform that we've created. So, you know, that's something for us that we rely on to A, source influencers, but B, also from a reporting perspective. There are influencer searching tools that you can look up that do help in terms of if you're kind of a small brand and you're just looking to scale up and start your kind of journey within influencer marketing and kind of finding people, then those can be really, really helpful. If you're going to start doing seeding to influencers, again, you just want a tool that can kind of manage that in the right way. So obviously we've built our own internal one that we work with clients to help them access that. But there are lots out there that you can kind of look at. What you want to do is, especially if you're starting to do it at scale, is have a platform that enables you to just organize that and maintain your relationships in an effective way, because it can be quite time consuming to a certain extent. So anything that can help to kind of automate that process, whether it's as simple as seeding or whether it's maintaining relationships and kind of organizing your network essentially of influencers, any tool that can help to manage that and make that more seamless is going to really, really help.
Brilliant, Tom. Thank you so much for coming on to Marketing Spice. Really interesting to hear your thoughts around influencer marketing.
No problem.
I'm Andrew Block. I'm an independent consultant. Celebrities do get things wrong from time to time. Really, the key is figuring out what they've done and whether it's something that you can live with. My favourite example of a brand sticking with a celebrity was when Tiger Woods had a huge deal with Nike to use their golf clubs. I think it was a £90 million deal. And when his form dipped, he just started to use a competitor brand. People were shouting that he should be dropped and this was wrong. But Nike played the long game, went into R&D, looked at some issues that Tiger had with their equipment, and they got it right. And then when he switched back to Nike, it was this huge PR win.
Thanks again to Tom from Crypt. Really interesting to hear his thoughts on how brands should be navigating social media and the trends to look out for in 2022. Now, when talking about PR, social and marketing, crisis management is never far away, and it's going to have a strategic importance for brands going forward. So let's meet someone who knows a thing or two about this. With me is Kate Gibson, who is the managing partner for consumer brands at Circle, to talk through the strategic importance and the role that PR and crisis management is going to have to play for brands over the next year. Kate, it's great to have you on board.
Hey, Paddy.
In this current climate, where we're having this sort of squeezed consumer and brands start to pass on the rising costs they are facing, what is the role PR is going to have to play in managing the potential damage this could cause in the relationship brands have with their customers?
Well, it's going to have a huge role to play. I think no surprises that the battle for attention, relevance and trust is greater than it's ever been. And it's going to be a huge challenge for our industry in the coming weeks, months and years ahead. And brands need to understand that the customer's perception is their reality. And as you said, despite recessions and squeezed finances, there are many brands that are having to pass on rising costs to their consumers, and they have no choice in that. So driving value perception beyond price, because price alone was not enough to differentiate anyway, is going to be more important than ever. And PR's role in that really is kind of addressing the changing definition of what value perception for consumers is and understanding what their motivations are so that we can make meaningful connections and move beyond that question of price. And people are really moving away from that definition of values, which used to be very functional, kind of what does this brand do? How much does it cost? Towards much more kind of emotional, life-changing and societal benefits, like how does this brand make me feel? How does it change my life? What value and benefit does it bring to society? And brands will have to work harder than ever in that space and be very clear on their purpose as a business and really understand their audience's motivations to find that common ground.
And that's really interesting and useful. And that sort of building that trust is key. And how do you start to help from a sort of full service PR agency? How do you start to help align this across the other channels, especially across the social and influencer marketing that brands are really pushing at the moment?
Kind of leading on from what I've said previously, I think it has to work really hard across every channel, and building trust doesn't happen overnight, and brands have to be really, really consistent in their efforts. And it's not just about what brands do, it's also how they do it. And that's where sort of social in particular comes into play, and kind of the way that brands present themselves to their audiences is absolutely key. But there are kind of four key ways that we sort of talk about building trust for brands with consumers. And the first is ability, which is about demonstrating and embracing responsibility. It's really important, particularly on social, that brands take actions effectively and fix mistakes quickly. The second is integrity. So being really clear and honest about your intentions as a brand, communicating openly and authentically and inclusively. Dependability, so being a reliable and decisive partner to all of your stakeholders, both internally and externally. And then finally, purpose, which we're probably going to talk more about further on. What as a brand are you doing to have a really positive impact for your consumers and your audiences and society? And all of those things work really closely together. But the absolute key to that is kind of brand comms being united behind a single-minded purpose. And that has to go well beyond commercial gain. And brands need to be working with agency partners that understand the role of each of these channels, and those partners working together really collaboratively to make sure each channel is used effectively.
And I think that's really interesting, this whole single-minded and that sort of focus that brands need to have. And they're currently at the moment, there's a whole thing going on where brands are having to push costs onto the consumer. When you hear the cost of the supply chain issues, and I'm working with someone who's in the salad industry, and their costs have gone from 40k a week to 150k a week in transporting salad across to Europe. That's going to have an impact on that sort of brand relationship. But then big areas of focus that brands are really going to have to push is this low carbon futures. And the government are now looking for big business and financial institutions to really publish their policies on what their approach to low carbon futures look like. My belief is that consumers are going to have to really start focusing on the way business behave around climate change and will make decisions whether to interact them with that brand or not.
This is a huge topic, this one, straight off the back of COP26, right? And that's shone an even brighter light on just how much everybody, particularly brands and businesses, have to do in this space. I think even people who saw a brand's sustainability actions as a bit of a hygiene factor, you know, a couple of years ago when they were making their purchasing decisions around brands, are going to become much more questioning as well. And it really is really climbing the agenda for consumers in their minds at the moment. I think I read the other day that 80% of consumers care about sustainability, but they've also got tons of questions about it. And that's probably no surprise. They're lost in this sea of green labels and sustainable criteria and huge kind of ambitious visions that these brands and businesses make. And the list is endless. And brands have an opportunity to help consumers navigate that confusion. And in terms of the role of PR in that, as a channel, we have an ability to tell a much more in-depth story and use earned media and the credibility of that earned media to start to answer some of consumers' questions. I think regardless of the story, there is a clear demand for brands to be, no surprise, 100% transparent about these processes and state their commitments really loud and clear. And that has to be done with authenticity. And I think probably most importantly, not underestimating the consumer's intelligence on the topic as well. I think brands may go out with the best of intentions, but a lot of that good work could be undone if they don't talk to consumers and engage with them in the right way.
I completely agree. And I think it comes on to the sort of next part of this whole conversation, which is the negative impact. We're currently hearing a lot of conversation around the negative impact influencers can have on brands. But those influencers also transpose into the poor behavior from staff. When your business has got a brand's got a clear purpose and it's clear agenda and it's transparent, and then the behavior of staff, even the leadership, impacts negatively on that. What are the sort of consequences if all this focus brand's doing on sustainability and then it's undermined by the internal behavior of both the leadership and the culture of a business?
Yes, it's a really good question. I think, yeah, we've talked a lot about external comms already, but trust really needs to come from within. And it is such a shame when the image that a brand or a business projects externally is not lived up to internally. And we've seen it countless times with businesses and brands. But yes, the foundations for building that trust definitely start from the inside out. And if a business isn't aligned and living its values internally, it's never going to be successful. From the wider world, where consumers, you know, are smart and more skeptical than they've ever been, and they can see through these businesses. It's a huge topic, but there's sort of two key parts to it. I think the best examples are kind of organizations that are really clear on their purpose. And we work with a whole range of clients, some who are really, really clear on their purpose as a business and the direction they're going in, and others who want support to define their permission space as a brand and what their guiding principles are going to be for their organization. But both are really rewarding in different ways, because they're still placing huge emphasis on making sure that everybody internally is pulling in the same direction, and that purpose becomes their lifeblood. And it's very, very evident internally and externally for everyone to see. But to do that successfully, good internal stakeholder management and communications to make sure everyone is aligned and on the journey is absolutely critical. And I think culture kind of leads on from that as well. It has to come from the top and live and breathe at every level within the organizations. And leaders need to do that. They need to lead by example. They need to do what they say they're going to do. And that goes from head office right the way through to on the ground, the shop floor, for example, in retail instances. And John Lewis Partnership, you know, continues to be, you know, a really good example of that. And we're also an employee-owned business as an agency, which is still quite unusual in our industry. And culture is really, really important to us. So what we do on the inside is also what we project on the outside. And we're really proud that I think everybody on our team understands where we're heading as a business and how they can make a contribution, to know that that contribution is valued. And we often get clients coming to us telling us how strong that message from our team is. And hopefully that means that we're doing a lot of things right as an agency as well.
I think culture is incredibly important. And I was just reading from one of my contacts, senior president in marketing in America, and she moved from one company to another with the promise that the culture, she's going to have this huge ambition and opportunity to transform this company's business and marketing to deliver sort of this thing. But the moment she got there, she was completely ostracized by the male leadership, and that culture that she led to believe she was going into actually was not what she received. And this post was all about how she was taken to them court, and that impact that's going to have on that potential good brand is going to shut that, probably that brand down. So I think brands really have to take an aware of making sure that, as you say, the leadership culture is right and is transparent and is actually transcends when they talk about it, it's real.
Yeah, it does. So just adding to that as well, just giving, you know, BrewDog is a prime example of that. A really innovative entrepreneurial brand, you know, loved by many, with a fantastic external image, until the lid was lifted by some disgruntled employees. Yes, the brand will probably bounce back, but trust has been eroded in the process, and it will take some time to rebuild from that.
And at BrewDog also fell in when they created, was it the pink beer or something, to sort of celebrate sort of diversity and stuff like that. And actually that stunt fell flat as well. So it's really important that when you're on the PR side of things, it's really looking at being true to what your business is.
Yes.
And not being gimmicky about it.
And your audiences as well. And, you know, going back to the first question around kind of understanding your audiences and their motivations, people see through these things very, so being authentic is really critical.
One of the things I've always been interested in is the metrics around PR. I remember in the days where it was a lot of the metrics were very much sort of vanity metrics and actually weren't really about delivering real value. And I know it's a hard one from a PR perspective to sort of talk about this, but in your perspective, what should brands really be looking for in terms of the metrics that they are looking to get from their PR side? And what insight are they looking to sort of get to show the impact that the PR is having for their brands?
It's the silver bullet question, isn't it? Yeah, of course, many agencies have struggled to prioritize measurement and build it into their strategies. And we are still, as an industry, probably dealing with a legacy of being, unfortunately, in some instances, still compared to sort of TV advertising. And people are looking at kind of vanity metrics that try and match those figures. And that's not what our work is designed to do. And PR outcomes, they do have a big role to play. There are lots of brands that are looking for fame and talkability. And that's a really exciting part of the job. But it's the action that consumers take from that work, which is where it gets really interesting. like consumers, value means different things for different businesses, and we have to deliver business outcomes as an industry as well and be able to demonstrate that as best we can. Because of course, people are investing money into us, into earned media, and it should lead to commercial gain, but there are different ways to get there depending on the brand that you're working with, and it's not a linear process. So I'm not going to give you a very quick, focused answer, I guess, but the way that we work as an agency, at a briefing stage, it's about the questions you ask, right? So you know, we always start with the end, asking businesses and brands, like, where do they ultimately want to be? Like, beyond the vanity metrics, beyond PR outcomes, where as a business do they want to get to? And what contribution do they want this work to make to their business? And we put measures in place with them before the work actually begins so that we can understand the impact of our work. And that might be around improving consumer perceptions of a brand or improving trust, or we have nostalgic brands in our portfolio that are looking to increase relevance with younger consumers. So we measure the shift in meaningfulness for younger groups of people. Social and digital is an intrinsic part of everything we do. And it would be very easy for brands to get carried away with vanity metrics around followers and reach, but it's about the action that those consumers take online and how much they engage with brands on social platforms that really matter. And we have had some, you know, fantastic instances working with certain brands, in particular a grocery retailer who always ran PR campaigns in the absence of above the line spend. So we could always very clearly see the impact that we'd had on sales and incremental basket spend for that particular brand. So that was a really, really rewarding piece of work. But I guess in summary, it's not a one size fits all approach. I wish I could give you the silver bullet answer, but every single business and brand is different, and it's about asking the right questions from the outset and making sure that the client team takes that measurement really seriously as well. Both sides have to strategically invest the time and the tools to put the right metrics and measurements in place before work begins. And then we can all feel really proud of what we've delivered as a result.
I think it's so true. And I think a lot of it stems to the briefing side of things and the amount of times where the briefs aren't right or just they're missing what they should be doing. And so from your perspective, how should a brand be approaching a PR brief and what should they really be looking to inform you guys so you can really deliver the right response?
So I think we've kind of really honed our briefing process. So we've got kind of our own IP around this as an agency and our own briefing process to make sure that we get the right questions. But we try and encourage clients where possible to follow our process rather than potentially a briefing process that they've held internally, because it may be something that's perhaps old or something that doesn't really work for the current climate and the current industry and the way it's working. So the ideal situation for us is that we sit in a room together and we nut it out as a collaborative client agency team right from the beginning. And we're starting right from the top in terms of kind of what the business outcomes are before we even get into the comms objectives. And then, like I said, measurement is absolutely key as well. But I think it's making sure that kind of all the key stakeholders from the client side are involved in that process at the beginning. So everybody's very, very clear on what they want to achieve through that piece of work and that everybody's bought in from the outset as well.
Brilliant. And thank you. And just last thing I want to ask is, what are the recommendations on what brands should be doing now to help them prepare for this ongoing crisis management, risk management, to really bring that authenticity and trust to their target audience and their customer?
Well, another big question, but I'll try and keep it brief. I think, yeah, I'm under no illusion. Trust doesn't happen overnight. It's something that builds over time. So consistent effort at every touch point is absolutely key. I think sort of going back to the conversation we've had, I think understanding your consumers' motivations and what they're looking for from brands inside out and back to front is absolutely critical. And not talking about this, you know, just what you want to talk about as a brand, but really making sure you find that common ground between the two of you. That's the sweet spot where consumers will engage and look beyond price and start to build trust with you as a business and an organization. Looking internally, I think building from the inside out, as we've discussed, is absolutely key. Everybody in your organization needs to be on that journey or needs clarity around that journey and what, you know, where you're heading as a business. And then finally, selecting the right agency partners. So making sure that every channel, its role in the mix is understood and how it can be and it's used effectively by the right experts to make sure that that message and that communications plan comes to life in the right way.
Brilliant. Kate, thank you so much for joining us on Marketing Spice. It was a fascinating and really enlightening conversation. So thank you for your time.
Thanks very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
My name's Graham Goodkind. I'm the founder and chairman of Frank PR. The thing with a lot of clients is they'll be communicating what they want to communicate. What the agency has to do is tread a fine line between what the client wants to say and what is interesting for people. Scan anyone's Twitter feed or Facebook page and the stories that are being shared will nearly always be underpinned by some common themes or triggers. The involvement of a celebrity, a real purpose, some compassion, some charity, a hint of controversy in order to make sure that it's shared and has talkability.
That brings us to the end of this episode of Marketing Spice. Thanks again to Kate Gibson from Circle and Tom Molyneux from Crypt. If you have any queries about anything you've heard, please do get in touch via the website, where we continue the conversation around PR and social trends for next year. Thanks again for listening. Do subscribe so you don't miss the next episode, where we'll be talking all about retail and e-commerce in 2022. This has been Marketing Spice.
Find out more about the latest trends and insights in marketing at pimento.co.uk.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.